Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2012. Lecture 17, delivered on October 24, 2012. The title of this lecture is Marginal Cost of Capital.
Today, the marginal cost of capital. I'm going to start this out with a little example here of something, but the culmination of this lecture, I'm going to hand out an in-class worksheet that you will do in groups. You will hand in one per group, damn it. And it is due at the end of class, so you're going to complete this exercise during the class period and master step-by-step how to do this problem, because it looks overwhelming to a certain extent until you realize that it's just step, step, step. And I'll be explaining why you're doing each step as you do it, but mostly it's about not asking why, just doing the thing, and then later you'll figure out why you're doing it. And that's the way life works. For example, when you learned how to speak, talk, you didn't ask, well, why do we put the subject before the verb? I mean, your parents would have slapped the shit out of you if you'd done that. I mean, let me try another one. Have you ever had sex? No, dude, really? You have, haven't you? Did you say, why are we doing this? No, you didn't. You lie. You just said, thank you, God. You need a dollar to invest in capital. And I say, okay, well, yeah, we're going to give you a dollar. Yeah, I've got a dollar here. But you see, I'm not going to do it that way. I'm not going to do it that way at all. Well, hell. You need a dollar, and you're going to get a dollar. But you see, in a corporation, you don't just give a dollar for your capital investment. We have what we call the optimal capital structure. Essentially, in a corporation, we know that debt is cheaper than equity. We know that. And so, logically, we would say the percent... total assets, which would be your debt plus equity. Now, at 100%, that's obviously the goal here. And we'd say, okay, well, no, let me do it this way. I'm going to redo this a little bit. I'm going to say percent of debt on the horizontal axis. Percent of debt, okay? And we would have the weighted average cost of capital up here. Look, if I don't use any debt at all, 0%. In other words, I finance all of my capital investment, my assets, my short-term and long-term, with equity, internally generated and new stock that I'd sell, my weighted average cost of capital would be K sub S, the cost of equity. As I add debt to the capital structure, debt is cheaper than equity. So as I add debt to the capital structure, I should have the cost of my weighted average cost of capital, whoops, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to take it all the way down. I should have my weighted average cost of capital go down to the point where if I used 100% debt, I'd have the after-tax cost of debt as my weighted average cost of capital. That seemed to be logical. It would be smart to finance everything with debt simply because debt is cheaper than equity. So why do we see in the real world that companies use a combination of debt and equity? That was the challenge that was set forth by two economists, financial economists, long, long ago, Modigliani and Miller. They said, why don't we see 100% debt in corporations if debt, after-tax cost of debt, is cheaper than equity? The answer is this. Because as you use more and more debt in your capital structure, your interest payments are going to go up and up to the point where you're going to put the lenders in a position of worrying about you defaulting. And if they have a worry of default, they're going to put a risk premium into your debt. And so, ultimately, in reality, we don't see this downward sloping curve on weighted average cost of capital. We see something that looks like this. We see that at 0% debt, we do have the equity cost, which is very high. And then as we add debt to the capital structure, our weighted average cost of capital goes down because we're adding a cheaper type of capital. But there comes a point somewhere where the debt starts getting too expensive because the lenders are going to say, we're going to charge you a higher interest rate because you could default on us. You're borrowing so much money that we don't think you could pay it back. So suddenly the cost of debt starts to get bad, and eventually the weighted average cost of capital curve swings back upward because the debt as a percent of the capital structure begins to get too burdensome. Right here, see this bottoming point? For different companies, it's different places. In different industries, it tends to have different kinds of regions of location. We call this place right here the percent of debt, percent of equity mix that makes your weighted average cost of capital its lowest. We call that the optimal capital structure. The optimal capital structure. Now, real world, you can see it all over the place. Some companies, the optimal capital structure is like 20% debt, 80% equity, 40% debt, 60% equity. Some, it is like 90% debt, 10% equity. And we have seen 100% debt companies. They usually don't last, but we've seen them where a company was just pure debt. Essentially, there were no shareholders anymore. But for the most part, the debt-to-equity mix is usually in the range of 30-70, 40-60, somewhere in there. And there's a whole science to figuring out the optimal capital structure, and we don't worry about that. I'm just going to tell you, here's the optimal capital structure. The optimal capital structure of this company is. And in a later course, you might see, well, we would work out how they do that. But once they've got it in their mind, they lock it in so that whenever they use money to finance their projects for a year, they will always use money in the proper mix. So when I offered you that dollar, well, I'm sorry, I can't give you just a dollar. Our optimal capital structure is 50% debt, 50% equity. So here is, you needed a dollar. Don't close your hand. You closed your hand, damn it. I got to give you this. There. Now finance your projects. So in the real world of capital investment, a company, when a project comes to the board for $10 million, they are literally going to pull the percent equity part of it. Let's say it's 40% debt, 60% equity. They would finance it with $6 million of equity, $4 million of debt. They would use the mix at all times. They would never pull just, oh, we got $10 million in net profit. We'll use that. That would be equity. They wouldn't do it that way. They would say, well, we've got a lot of equity, but if you want $10 million, we're going to use $6 million of the profit, which is equity, and then we're going to borrow $4 million and put those together and finance a project. At all times, they would be financing with the mix, never with. See, I had a dollar. I could have just given you a dollar, but I didn't. I gave you 50 and 50. Even though I did have a dollar, I wouldn't do it that way at all. So that sets up this whole routine, this whole thing we're going to do here in the next little bit of time. This is the in-class work exercise. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to hand this out. You work in a group of a couple of you to five of you and put your names on them so I can read the names. And you'll prepare one to turn in. I caution you, there is a graph that you do at the end of this. You cannot be a Yeti.
Graph.
Don't. Because you have to be really careful to see this crossing point. If you graph it carefully, you'll see the crossing point. That tells you where to stop taking projects on. But if you do slob graph, you know, if you're planning to major in medicine or something like that, you're going to be in trouble because you can't. So do it right. And when the exercise is over, you just turn them in here, the one for the group. Don't each of you turn one in, one for your group with all the names on it. And as I'm doing this, I'm also going to be going around to make sure that you're doing it right. And if you're not doing it right, I will gently encourage you to do the right thing, and I'll, you know, hit you over the head or something like that. So, start handing these down the meat grinder here, if you would. Hand them up the grinder. Ladies, down and up. Folks, down and up. Let's see, try it this way. Down and up. Down. One, two, three, four, five, six. Take one for each of you, but only one gets turned in. Seven. You're going to need a couple more down here. Let me see how it goes down here. Take one for each in the group. Yeah, you'll need one more down there. No, you got some. Okay. Sorry about that. You got one more? Okay, you're all good. Yeah, they're coming. Make sure you get one for each person here. You need one more. There you go. You got. Okay, how are we doing here? You need some? Okay. Pitch these that way. How you doing here? You don't have any. Just hand them down. I'll catch you on the other side. And, okay, we got any extras? Or you're still waiting here, right? You got some. Okay. You need another one? Yeah, you need one more here. I just want to make sure we have someone missing one here. You need one. You got one? Everyone got one now? Is there anyone who doesn't have one? Oh, great. Got some extras. Okay, now, Let me go through the narrative with you. And yes, a problem just like this will be on the second exam. So if you can get the idea of this problem down now, you'll see that it's actually just really straightforward to do this kind of a problem. Here we go. Aramark Inc. has a capital structure of 40% debt and 60% common equity. So it's debt equity optimal. In other words, where it figures optimal capital structure is, the lowest point on its weighted average cost of capital is at 40% debt and 60% equity. The managers consider this optimal and want to maintain it. Net income for the coming year is expected to be, that's got to be a correction. Net income for this year, correct that. Net income for this year, because it's this year's income that's going to be spent on the capital projects. Net income for the current year is $1.6 million. Again, net income for the current year is $1.6 million. Jennifer Falkins, the loan officer at the local bank, has set up the following schedule for Aramark's borrowings. From zero to $500,000, it's going to cost the company 8%. But if the company wants to borrow more, because the risk of default has gone up, amounts of money borrowed in excess of $500,000 will cost the company 12%. There are 50,000 shares of common stock outstanding. The firm's tax rate is 30%. The market price per share of Aramark Common is $40. They have declared and just paid a $4 per share dividend, and the expected growth rate of that dividend is 8%. Float on new common issue is 6% of market. Managers are considering several investment opportunities for the coming year. They had Tom Allen, their financial analyst, recommend the following projects, and you are in charge of figuring out which ones the company will take on. Step by step, because there's a lot of information there, break it down into bite-sized noms, and then you won't get indigestion with it. So, pursuant to the bite-sized noms, I hate it when that does that. It makes me want to hurl. Okay. Walk with me here for a minute. Always step one, you get your component costs of capital. In other words, what does each part of your capital structure cost? You have cheap debt. You're going to have that more expensive debt. See your cheap debt? That's 8% debt. You're going to have more expensive debt at 12%. Then you're going to have the cost of your internally generated capital. In other words, what's the cost of that shareholder's residual that's there at the bottom of the income statement? And then you're going to figure out what the cost would be if you want to sell more common stock to raise more money. That's cost of new equity. Step one, you've got the cost of your cheap debt. That would be KD1 after tax, which is going to be the cost of debt, your first level of debt, times 1 minus your tax rate. Okay? That will give you the after-tax cost of debt on the first tier. And in that case, you work through it, and I encourage you to make sure you can do this also on your own. The firm's tax rate is 30%. So it would be 8% times 1 minus 0.3, which would come out to be, survey says, 5.6%. That's your cost of debt on the first tier after taxes. You can see that that's pretty cheap stuff. But if you want to go up and borrow more than $500,000, you're going to have the after-tax cost of debt on the second tier, which would be K sub D2 times 1 minus the tax marginal tax rate. And there you're going to have that would be 12% times 1 minus 0.3. So if you do that, you'll find that the second tier is going to run you 8.4%. Still pretty cheap stuff. Now, real life, a lot of times, and this actually, I saw one of these schedules. It's fancier than what I've got there, but it actually had like four tiers. You know, well, it was something like up to $750,000, it was one. Then from $750,001 up to $2 million, it was another one. They had like four steps in it. For the purposes of anything that I would do here, there would be two steps. I would never take you beyond two steps. And that's not terribly off what happens. And I honestly, in my own experience, I've seen in companies where I've gotten debt, I've seen two tiers. But I know that there can be more than two tiers, and I've seen them. But in my own company experience, I was given two tiers. One of them was that I think it was almost like 8-10 years ago. It was like there was one that was up to $50,000, and then there was another higher borrowing rate above $50,000. Up, but they did put a cap on me. A total cap was like $200,000. But anyway, okay. Now let's go to internally generated equity. Remember that formula that you want to use for internally generated equity? The cost of existing stock is going to be your dividend one period out divided by the price of the stock plus your growth rate. This is where you have to be careful. You're doing the dividend one period out. Look up there. What is the dividend that they have just paid? How much is it? Yeah, $4. You have got to grow that and say, what's the dividend one period from now to get the right one for the formula? In this case, the dividend at period one would be $4 times 1 plus the growth rate of the dividend, which is a whopping 8%. That would give you, in other words, the dividend in the next period is going to be $4.32. That's D1, which is the one that you want to use for the formula. Over the price of the stock, what the hell was the price of this stock? $40. Plus your growth rate, which was 0.08. So if you honk that thing out, you get $4.32 divided by 40 plus 0.08, 18.8%. Now this is pretty realistic right here. You see, I mean, that equity is expensive up there. See that? Sorry about that. Yeah, I got to keep looking back there because I move that around and then you can't see it. See how equity, this is the money that the company has generated internally. In other words, this is, if they finance a project using their net income after dividend, that's what that capital costs. And it's expensive. They have it. It's right there. It's in the bank. But it's expensive equity. It's expensive stuff. So they better find some pretty good projects because that's one of the component costs of capital. Now let's say, okay, what if they run through their equity, their income, their you know, the cash that they've got at the bottom line of their profits, and they sell common stock. They sell some to raise more money. What's that going to cost? Well, that would be the cost of new equity And if you go back to your formula, you see that that's the dividend, period one, times the current price minus the float, plus the growth rate. So in other words, if they finance with new equity, they don't get $40 a share. They get $40 minus the float, $40 minus 6%. See that 6? So in that case, it would be 4 times 1 plus the 0.08. Remember, you're always doing dividend 1. That's usually where people trip on the problem for the exam, is they use D0 instead of D1, and then they get cooked because everything else wrong from there. Do dividend 1. Now, bring it underneath. We're going to say, okay, times divided by 40 times 1 minus the float. So in other words, this company isn't going to get $40 a share if it sells common stock to get money to spend on projects. It's going to get 40 times 0.94, which is $37.60. Oh, and plus 0.08. So that's going to be even more expensive because when they sell common stock, they don't get the full bang of the market price. They have to pay the underwriting fees. So we're going to say $4.32 divided by $37.60 plus 0.08, that growth rate, 19.49%. So there you go. That's kind of expensive money. You see that? Notice that equity is a lot more expensive than debt. And if you're going to sell common stock to raise money for projects, boy, that gets really expensive. That's why there's always this tendency for companies to use debt in their capital structure, because debt is cheap. It gets uncheap because if you borrow too much, the lenders start popping the interest rate on you pretty severely because you're risking default more. But now we go to the next step. These are called, what's going to come here are called the breakpoints. The breakpoints are the places in your capital expenditures where you would have to shift from one component to another component. You see, your first major shift is going to happen when you spent $500,000 on projects, when you have used $500,000 in debt. Not $500,000 total, but when you've burned up $500,000 in debt, a major thing happens. You have a break point. Suddenly, you're paying more for money. You're going to have a second event when you're going to be spending equity money too. Your net income, you're going to be spending net income. There's going to be a place where you run out of that net income, that cash you made from operations, and you'll have to go out and sell common stock to keep going on your project financing. That is a break point as well. So in this case, there will be two breakpoints. There will be a breakpoint when you have to stop, when you've used up $500,000 in debt. And there's going to be another breakpoint where you've used up your $1.6 million minus dividends. Okay? And then you've got to go out and sell common stock. Now, you see how I've got a third breakpoint there? Don't let me bluff you. There will be two breakpoints on this one. Now, if you also had an option for preferred stock to sell that, that would have been a break point. Or if you'd had a third tier of debt, that would have been a break point too. But in this case, because you have one jump in debt, and then, of course, you'll have your jump from internally generated equity to externally generated equity, you're going to have two jumps. You're going to have two break points. So you can cross out the third break point because in this company, you will have only two breaks. One where you have to start using more expensive debt, and then another one where you'll have to start using more expensive equity. Now we get back to that exercise, to what I was talking about at the beginning. When I wouldn't give you a dollar, I had to give you 50 cents from one place and 50 cents from another. When we're spending money on projects, we are actually financing every dollar is going to be spent according to the optimal capital mix. 40% will be debt, and then 60% will be the equity. Every dollar we spend. So the way I'm going to figure out my first breakpoint, when I have to jump from cheap debt to expensive debt, is to say, okay, how would I do that? What would the decision making criterion be? Okay. $500,000. Is going to be 40% of what I spend. The other 60% would have been equity for my first rung of projects. So my first breakpoint one, is going to be when I run out of cheap debt divided by the percentage of cheap debt that I'm using. This is a part that some of you will see it right away. Some of you will say, "Da fuh." Trust me. You see, because I'm not spending $500,000 right off the bat. That $500,000 is going to last me a long time because I am adding to that hamburger helper. Equity. I've got money in the bank I made from operations. 60% of every dollar I'm spending is going to be that money. Only 40% is going to come out of this bank loan. So the total amount of project I can run with that $500,000 is $500,000 divided by 0.40. And if you do that, you find out that actually means $1,250,000 in projects would use $500,000 in debt. The rest of it would have been equity on that tier. So again, I can spend project-wise $1,250,000, and that would include $500,000 of borrowed money. At that point, the bank says, now it's time to start paying more. That would be a break point. My cost of capital, my weighted average cost of capital, has just popped. The next thing that I'm going to do here is I'm going to say, okay, my next breakpoint would be when I run out of internally generated equity. In other words, when I run out of money that I made at the bottom line and I have to go out and sell stock for more equity money. Well, okay, how much money am I going to have in the bank from my operations? What's the amount of money? I look up here and I say, okay, last year, that'll be the money that I have for this year's projects. The company's net income, where the hell is it? Oh, I was just testing you. I wanted to see where, okay. $1.6 million. Okay, I got $1.6 million of shareholder money in the bank. But wait, the shareholders have to be paid their dividend before I have money for capital projects. So I'm going to have to figure out how much I pay in dividends. Okay, so in other words, my earnings minus my dividends is what I need to find. That'll tell me how much equity money I have internally. to spend. Okay, well, let me look at my earnings. $1,600,000. How much did I pay in dividends? I have 50,000 shares, and I'm paying a $4 per share dividend. So that means that I'm going to send out the door that I won't be able to spend on capital projects $200,000. Let me make sure you see that. I told you the net income. So in order for me to be able to know how much I can spend on capital projects, I need to know how much of that I have left after I have paid my dividends. So that's why I said, okay, I've got that $1.6 million, that's my net income. My shareholders, there are 50,000 shares. I'm going to give each of those shares $4. So that'd be $200,000 in dividends. So in other words, the amount of equity that I have to spend on projects is going to be $1,400,000. But just like debt, that's only 60% of my spending. So I would take that over 0.60. So the total amount of project cost I can cover with internally generated equity after I've paid my dividends is going to be 1250 divided by 0.6. Is that right? Oh, I'm just testing your ass. Yeah, I see that. 1400000. I was going to say that number doesn't look familiar at all to me. 2,333,000. $333. What that number is telling me is that if 60% of the money that I'm spending on capital projects is equity, I can spend $2,333,000 before I have to go outside of my pocketbook and sell common stock. That is breakpoint two. That's breakpoint two. So in other words, what's going on here with these two breakpoints? I am figuring out, okay, if debt is going to be 40% of every dollar I spend, and I can get $500,000 cheap, that means in total spending, I can do $1,250,000 with cheap debt. If I have $1.4 million of earnings after I've paid my dividends, and 60% of every dollar I spend in capital projects is out of earnings after dividends, I can spend $2,333,000 on capital projects before I run out of money that I earned after dividends. These two constitute the two breakpoints on this. There are two jumps, one that happens when I run out of cheap debt and one that happens when I run out of cheap common equity. That's two breakpoints. Once you've got that down, it actually becomes pretty darned easy. The marginal cost of capital. The marginal cost of capital is actually fairly easy. Look. There are three here. Your first MCC, your first marginal cost of capital, and I want you to remember what I'm about to say here. The first marginal cost of capital is nothing but your weighted average cost of capital, your WACC. But then it goes up from there. Your first marginal cost of capital is the weight of cheap debt times the after-tax cost of cheap debt plus the weight of internal equity times the cost of internal equity. That's the cheapest you're going to get. It will be when you are using cheap debt and internally generated equity. Soon enough, though, you're going to run out of cheap debt first. So then the second tier of the marginal cost of capital is going to be the weight of more expensive debt times the after-tax cost of that expensive debt. But you still have money in the bank from your earnings after dividends. So your second one will have the weight of cheaper stock, internally generated equity, times the cost of internally generated equity. And then, not surprisingly, there will come a time after you have spent a total of $2,333,000, that's going to be when there is nothing cheap in this world for you. You see, on this first level here, up to $1,250,000, everything was cheap. Both of your component costs of capital were cheap. After $1,250,000, you had to go back and the bank's going to start charging you more. But you're still running with internally generated equity. Up to $2,333,000, at least you still have cheap equity. On the last tier, the marginal cost of capital on the third tier is going, after you cross breakpoint two, there ain't no sunshine left because you're dealing with expensive debt, the weight of debt times the after-tax costs of the second tier of debt plus the weight of new equity times the cost of new equity in your portfolio. That comes after you have blown through your $2,333,000. Those are the tiers of the marginal cost of capital. Now, here's what's going to happen next. You got almost everything ready to clean up the problem. The only thing that you have that you don't have here is a list of your investments from the best to the worst. You're going to need that next. Your investment opportunity schedule, you just rearrange these so that you're going from the best one to the lowest one. So Project D is going to cost you $1.5 million. And the rate of return on it is 15%. Is that right? Yeah, 15%. The next one would be Project A, which would cost an additional $600,000 and return you 12%. The next project is Project B, which would cost $1 million, and it would have a return on the investment of 10%. And then your Project C, which costs $800,000 and pulls in 8%. Now, here's what you're going to do, the final step in this. You've got to get your marginal costs of capital. Now, step one, on this graph, you've got to figure out what your axes, what your labels are. I've made this convenient, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, so that you should be able to go up to 20% on the vertical axis, cost of capital axis, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Now, I've made this one convenient so that you should be able to do $500,000 increments on the horizontal axis. So you would have $500,000. That would be $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, $4 million. That should be able to cover all four projects if you did all four. Get your axes ready, and then what you're going to do is the first thing that you're going to want to do is put in your breakpoints. You put in the breakpoints as dotted lines. Now, your first breakpoint is right there. And I broke my ruler coming to class, but you're going to have to do this carefully. You put in your breakpoints. You'll have your first breakpoint right here at $1,250,000. And you put them in as dotted lines. Your second one is at $2.33 million, which is approximately there. You have to do this carefully. Now, these breakpoints are useful, are important, because when you calculate the marginal cost of capital, and I'll do the first one here, the first marginal cost of capital for this company would be 40% times 5.6%, 0.4 times 5.6 plus 0.6 times 18.8. would be 13.52%. Okay. Now, you see that 13.52%? 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. That is your cost of capital on your first tier up to the first breakpoint. That's why you're drawing in the breakpoints. Your second marginal cost of capital, and I'll do that one, would be, what was the higher one, 8.4%. So we'd have 0.4 times 8.4, plus, you're still with the cheaper equity, 0.6 times 18.8. That's 14.64%. So in other words, in terms of the MCC graph, you suddenly, at the first breakpoint, you jump to 14.64% debt. 14.4% cost of capital. And that runs all the way out to your second breakpoint, and then you jump again to the third breakpoint, to the third MCC. Now, at the same time, you'll draw in this one, and that one will go on forever. At the same time, I need to put in my investment opportunity schedule. Project D pulls 15% and will cost us $1.5 million. So $1.5 million is going to bring us 15%. That should be, I didn't draw that perfectly in there. See that? That's Project A. Oh, I'm sorry, Project D. Then, if I want to do Project A, that needs $600,000 more for a total of $21 million. That second project gets us 12%. So the second one, I would spend another $600,000, taking us up to $2.1 million on Project A. So in other words, Project D, we spend this much money. Project A, we spend this much money. Then Project B would take another $1 million, taking us up to $3,100,000. That would be right about there. And Project B takes us 10%. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Where was I? These lock up. Don't draw a line up and down. These guys lock up. Once I finish paying for Project D, then that was $1.5 million. Then I'm going to spend $600,000 on Project A. And then I'm going to spend another $1 million on Project B. And then if I go even further, $800,000 more for $3.9 million total, I'd go to there. And Project C is pulling 8%. See that D, A, B, C? That's called the IOS. You want to label it. Usually you do it in a different colored pen or pencil, just to highlight it. But this guy that's rising here, see this? That is your marginal cost of capital. Now I want you to look at something here. Do you see how Project D is all above the marginal cost of capital for it? Project D starts with money that's pretty cheap, but even at the end, Project D is still pulling more than it cost. Do you see how Project D is at 15% and the last dollar I spend on it is at 14.64%? That means that Project A is a go. As long as the last dollar you spend on it is better than the marginal cost of that dollar, you take the project. If even the last dollar of that project costs more than the project returns, you reject it. It's that simple. You could have the whole project come in above, except for a couple of bucks. Nope, you kick the project out. So if you're looking at this, you notice something about Project A? Do you see something about Project A there? What do you notice about the return on Project A compared to its cost? The whole damn thing is lower. This project, you're not going to take it. and that was your second best project, so you know damn well you're not going to take any of the other projects. Project A, based in technical terms, Project A blows. Because Project A is going to turn me 12%. Every dollar of that project is going to cost me 14.64%. I'm not going to take that project. Even if most of the project came in above 14.64%, if even one little nick of that line was below the marginal cost of its capital, end of project. No. So the bottom line of this is, and what I think I'll do, just to make this a little easier for you, is I'll just have you do this for the weekend and turn it on Monday. I want you to complete the IOS, the MCC, do the IOS, get that last MCC, put that in so that you have both your MCC and your IOS on one graph. That's why they call this the MCC-IOS graph. That's what we call it, MCC-IOS. Do the whole MCC-IOS, and write down here at the bottom, in a complete sentence, what you do, your project decision. This is actually done, real. This is real. We do it all the time. It's the most powerful tool in our portfolio for project, one of the most, for project decision making. You say, all right, that's it. Yeah. Huh? Yeah, I did the IOS for you, but you want to do it neatly and carefully and then finish it up, turn it in on Monday. That's all I have for you. I thank you.